and welcome to AQA A-Level Biology Essentials. I'm your tutor for today, and over the next 10 minutes, we're going to dive deep into one of the most fascinating and exam-critical topics in your specification, inheritance. This is Section 3.2, and it's absolutely vital for your A-Level success. Whether you're revising for your mocks or gearing up for the real thing, this episode will give you the clarity and confidence you need to tackle any inheritance question that comes your way. So, what are we covering today? We'll explore monohybrid and dehybrid crosses, sex linkage, autosomal linkage, epistasis, and the all-important chi-squared test. These aren't just abstract concepts, they're the building blocks of how examiners test your genetic reasoning skills. And trust me, once you understand the patterns, you'll start seeing marks stack up in your favor. Let's get started. First up, monohybrid crosses. This is where it all begins. A monohybrid cross involves a single gene with two alleles, one dominant, one recessive. The classic example? Mendel's pea plants, tall versus short. When you cross two heterozygous parents, let's say AA crossed with E, you get a predictable 3-to-1 phenotypic ratio in the offspring, 3 tall, 1 short. But here's the key. Examiners don't just want the ratio, they want to see you're working. That means clearly labeling your parental genotypes, circling or boxing your gametes, and constructing a proper Punnett square. Missing any of these steps, you're losing marks. One mark is often awarded just for separating gametes correctly. So take your time, be methodical, and show every step. Now, let's scale up to dihybrid crosses. This is where two genes are involved, each with two alleles. The classic ratio here is 9 tasks or 3 to 1 when you cross two heterozygous parents, A baby crossed with A baby. 9 offspring show both dominant traits, 3 show the first dominant and second recessive, 3 show the first recessive and second dominant, and 1 shows both recessive traits. The Punnett square is bigger, 4 by 4, so it's easy to make mistakes. My advice? Write out all 4 possible gametes from each parent first, AB, 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 then fill in the grid systematically. Don't rush. Examiners love to test whether you can apply the principles of independent assortment here, so make sure you understand that each gene is inherited independently, unless of course they're linked, which we'll get to in a moment. Speaking of linkage, let's talk about autosomal linkage. This is when two genes are located on the same chromosome, so they tend to be inherited together. The result? You don't get the expected 9:3:3:3:1 ratio. Instead, you see a much higher proportion of parental phenotypes and far fewer recombinants. Why? Because linked alleles travel together during meiosis. However, and this is crucial, crossing over can still occur, producing a small number of recombinant offspring. Examiners love to ask you to explain why observed ratios differ from expected, and autosomal linkage is a key reason. So if you see a skewed ratio, think linkage, and always mention that crossing over can still produce recombinants, just in lower numbers. Next, sex linkage. This is where genes are located on the sex chromosomes, usually the X chromosome. The Y chromosome is much smaller and carries very few genes. Classic examples include colorblindness and hemophilia. Here's the trick. You must use the correct notation. Write X with a superscript for the allele, like X to the power of H for normal vision and X to the power of H for colorblindness. And remember that males only have one X chromosome, so they're hemizygous. If they inherit the recessive allele, they express the condition. Females need 2 copies to be affected. A common mistake? Attaching alleles to the Y chromosome. Don't do it. The Y is mostly blank. Examiners will penalize you for incorrect notation, so practice this until it's second nature. Now, epistasis. This is where one gene masks the expression of another. It's not the same as a dihybrid cross, even though you're dealing with two genes. The key difference? The phenotypic ratio is modified. Instead of 9:3:3:1, you might see 9:3:3:4, or 9:7, or even 15:1, depending on the type of epistasis. Recessive epistasis, for example, produces a 9:3:4 ratio because the homozygous recessive genotype at one locus masks the effect of the other gene entirely. Examiners expect you to recognize these modified ratios and explain the gene interaction. So if you see a weird ratio, think epistasis, not just independent assortment. Finally, the chi-squared test. This is the statistical tool you use to determine whether observed results differ significantly from expected results. The formula is chi-squared equals the sum of observed minus expected squared divided by expected. You calculate this for each phenotypic category, then add them up. Next, you compare your chi-squared value to the critical value from a table, using the correct degrees of freedom. That's the number of phenotypic categories minus 1. If your chi-squared value is greater than the critical value at p equals 0.05, you reject the null hypothesis. The null hypothesis always states there is no significant difference between observed and expected frequencies. If you reject it, you're saying the difference is unlikely to be due to chance alone. Common mistakes? Calculating degrees of freedom incorrectly. Remember, it's categories minus 1, not the number of offspring. And always state the null hypothesis clearly. That's often worth a mark on its own.
Right. Let's talk exam technique. Inheritance questions are heavily weighted toward AO2. That's application of knowledge at 45%. So you need to be able to take genetic principles and apply them to unfamiliar contexts. Don't just memorize ratios, understand why they occur. When you're constructing genetic diagrams, structure is everything. Go vertical. Parents at the top, then genotypes, then gametes, then offspring, then phenotypes. Label every stage. Examiners are looking for clarity and logic. Missing labels? Lost marks. For chi-squared questions, always show you're working in a table. Include columns for observed, expected, O minus E, O minus E squared, and O minus E squared divided by E. Then sum the final column. It's methodical, it's clear, and it earns you method marks even if your final answer is slightly off. Common mistakes? Confusing epistasis with dihybrid inheritance. If the ratio isn't 9:3:3:1, ask yourself, is one gene masking another? Also, don't forget to mention random fertilization or sample size when explaining why observed ratios differ from expected. Vague answers like, it's just chance, won't cut it. Be specific. And for sex linkage, practice your notation. Write it out 10 times if you have to. Examiners are strict on this. Okay, quickfire recall time. Pause after each question and see if you can answer without looking. 1. What is the phenotypic ratio for a monohybrid cross between two heterozygous parents? Answer: 3:1. 2. What does the null hypothesis state in a chi-squared test? Answer: there is no significant difference between observed and expected frequencies. 3. Why do linked genes not assort independently? Answer: because they're on the same chromosome and are inherited together, though crossing over can still produce recombinants. 4. What is epistasis? Answer: when one gene masks or modifies the expression of another gene. 5. In sex linkage, why are males more likely to express X-linked recessive conditions? Answer: because males are homozygous, they only have one X chromosome, so one recessive allele is enough to express the condition. How did you do? If you got them all, fantastic. If not, go back and review those sections. All right, let's wrap up. Today we've covered the essentials of inheritance, monohybrid and dehybrid crosses, autosomal and sex linkage, epistasis, and the chi-squared test. These are high-value topics in your exams, and mastering them will set you up for success. Remember, show you're working, label your diagrams, use correct notation, and always think about why ratios might differ from expected. Examiners reward clear, logical reasoning. If you found this helpful, make sure you're practicing with past papers and mark schemes. There's no substitute for seeing how examiners phrase questions and what they're looking for in answers. Thanks for listening to AQA A-Level Biology Essentials. Good luck with your revision, and remember, you've got this.